Project Independence is the aging in place initiative of the town of North Hempstead. One of the many services we offer is help at home with minor home maintenance. Call 311 or 869-6311 to get more information or receive services.
Welcome back to Project Independence on You. We still have our team here. Graciela Hall is still here. If it were me, I usually take a nap in between, but that didn't happen today because I'm playing John Ryan's part. And we just had a very interesting segment with Helen Keat about downsizing. And we now come into a different kind of an area with a lady who I have had the pleasure of talking with before, Antonio Petrich, who's an author, has written several books, which we can talk about later, about women's suffrage. And I don't know if you know it, Antonio, but you've had an impact on my life. I have three granddaughters, two of which are of voting age now, and I have reminded them of what I've heard through you about the fact that a lot of women fought very hard to get the right to vote so that they better vote.
That's right.
I try to say that in a nice way, but, you know, I actually learned a lot from you being on the show. And the importance of what women and some men, frankly, fought for that right.
Oh, yes. We couldn't have done it without the men because they had the votes.
That's a good point. Yeah. They could have just said no.
Right. They tried to.
Yeah, I know.
For
well,
many years.
But that's hard to do with good women.
But yes, we do owe a lot to the men as well.
Yeah. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what's happening nowadays. I know wasn't too long ago, you were given a pretty nice acknowledgement from an organization. Maybe you could brag about that a little bit. It was given a recognition as you actually founded it, but what I'm looking for is there was an what was it?
Oh. Well, what we're doing, let me just tell you what we're doing.
In
1917, after a very long battle, women got the vote in New York State. And the women's suffrage movement had been following a two-pronged attempt to get the vote. And the first prong was getting it state by state. And that was a very big faction of the women's suffragists that wanted to do it by the state-by-state method. And then there was another faction of younger, more, let's say, progressive, if you want to say progressive, young women who said that's just taking too long. We need to get an amendment to the Constitution and just make a full sweep across the country. So in 1917, New York State did get the vote. And one of the reasons they were so pleased was because New York State had the most representatives in the House of Representatives. At that time, they had 44. And they felt if they could get the vote in New York State, women could then go to the polls in 1918 and vote for people who would vote for the amendment to the Constitution. And that's kind of what happened. So I was involved with the centennial in 2017, and now we come up to the centennial of the passage, or the ratification, rather, of the 19th Amendment, and that's in 2020.
This battle started in 1848, I understand?
I think the battle actually started in year zero.
Oh, really?
Because women were always trying to get equal rights and always looking for equality. If you remember Abigail Adams telling her husband to remember the ladies, and he sort of chuckled and didn't remember them. And then later on, we did have a lot of women trying to work for women's rights and equality. But we say it formally began in 1848 because that's the first time they had a conference or convention in Seneca Falls to actually organize themselves and work together and sign a petition and write articles in newspapers. And so that's kind of the beginning, but I think it began way before then.
Hmm. You bring up a point that if you go back, it did start in the year zero.
I think just Adam and Eve probably argued about who was going to be taking care of the
garbage. Did they vote, I wonder? you know, it's always, I remember working in an insurance company in the 50s, and in that, which is where I met my first wife, and in that company there was a department where we rated policies. And in this department, there were 3,000 desks with people with books and pencils and calculators, which is how they did those things back then. But what I do remember is that the men were all paid more than the women, even though they sat next to each other and did the same thing. And I actually did think it was wrong back in the 50s.
That was very well much accepted.
Yeah, but how did it get that way? That's not what the topic of this is.
Well, and also in that time, and I had been speaking to some younger women not long ago, and I said, well, you know, in the 60s when I was growing up, a woman couldn't get a credit card. She couldn't buy a house without a man to sign for her. I wanted to get a credit card in my own name, and they just said, go home and ask your husband to sign for you or your father or someone. And it was very prevalent even up till those days. It's only after the 60s and 70s that things began to change.
You couldn't probably rent a car, even, if you think about it.
No, because you didn't have a credit card.
Right.
I remember when I first got a credit card at Lord & Taylor's, it did not have my first name. It said Mrs. John C.
Oh, okay.
And he had to sign.
And that was it. No. He didn't have to. This was just after, I guess, in the late 60s. Mm-hmm. And it was only recently, recently in the past like 10 years, that I said, hey, I want the credit card in my name, mm-hmm. because he never uses it anyway. So, and they changed it mm-hmm. to my name.
Now they will, of course.
But you think about it now, it's like, how could that be? But it was.
It's absurd. Yeah. I have a question for you. I was reading a little bit about you. And I was interested to read about the lady Emily Warren Roebling that mm-hmm. you wrote about, who helped her husband design the Brooklyn Bridge. I thought that was fascinating.
Well, she didn't actually help him design it. It was designed by her father-in-law, John Roebling. But he became very ill during the building of the bridge, and he became ill because they didn't understand the prevalence of the bends in a disease of going up and down too quickly from different pressures under the water. So the nitrogen bubbles would form in their blood, and they would have a lot of symptoms, and some of them died. He did not die, but he was very debilitated. So she went back and forth and became his conduit between the men who were building the bridge, and he spent 10 years away from the bridge. And she was his eyes and his ears, and she didn't actually design it, but she facilitated the
design of it.
The design.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yes, and there is a plaque on the bridge honoring her. It's halfway.
That's interesting.
Across
the bridge. I have walked across that bridge.
Yeah, if you walk across, it's halfway across. On one of the stanchions, there's a plaque honoring Emily Warren Roebling.
Another question, actually, of all the women that you have featured in your books, whom have you found as the most interesting or your favorite?
I don't really have a favorite. I know somebody just asked me that the other day, and I think Emily was wonderful. I think there were so many wonderful women who, Alice Paul, who fought for the Congressional Union for the amendment. Just so many women, it's hard to say.
I happen to look at that same thing, and it was the Alva Vanderbilt Belmont, who married a Vanderbilt, and she married a Belmont, and apparently she was a very interesting lady, and it almost sounded like they could make a movie. I don't know if they ever did, about her life.
She was a crackerjack.
Yeah.
As a young girl, her family was not wealthy, and they were not poor. They were in society, as it was called. But they were not wealthy, and she didn't like that. She wanted to be wealthy. So she decided the best way to do that would be to marry a rich husband. Which in those days, since women were so restricted as to what they could do.
There's still women that do that today.
Not a bad idea.
Sounds good to me.
That's true. So she married Willie K. Vanderbilt, who was the grandson of Cornelius Vanderbilt. And they had three children, and they had an enormous number of houses and estates. but she wasn't happy with him. So she sued him for divorce in 1895, which was very unusual for a woman to do. And she got a divorce. She got custody of her three children. She got some of the properties. And then she married Oliver Belmont. And Oliver Belmont was the love of her life. She really loved him. But he died in 1908. So now she's a widow, and she has three grown children, and she's had pots and pots of money from both men. And she's at loose ends, and she decides to work for suffrage. She finally wakes up to the realization that women do not have the freedom and the ability to affect their own future in many instances. So she starts working for suffrage, and she pours money into the suffrage movement. She works herself, but mostly she gives money. She built them a house in Washington, D.C., called the Sybil Belmont House. It's now a National Historic Site. And she built, she bought them a building on, and when I say them, the National Women's Suffrage Association, she bought them a building on Fifth Avenue so that they could be near the city and have take advantage of the publicity in the city and the newspapers and the banking and things. And she was very, very active. And usually Ava, whatever she got wanted, she got.
I definitely think she would. She'd make a good movie.
Yeah, she would. Yeah. She was feisty. She wasn't always pleasant. People didn't always like her. But you didn't have to like her.
Yeah.
You just had to appreciate what
she
was doing.
I mean, the Belmont name is obviously on Long Island.
Yes, racetrack. But,
yeah, racetrack, yeah. Horse racing.
Yes, he was quite wealthy as well.
Yeah. They were. I finally got through the thing I stumbled on before. You won the Trailblazer Award.
Oh, yes, from Nassau right. County, yes.
Right, right. And that was in celebration of Women's History mm-hmm. Month. So you're a known entity here as far as women's suffrage and promoting the fact that that's probably still an ongoing battle, I think, you know.
Absolutely, and it's not just an ongoing battle. We all have the vote now. It's an ongoing battle to remind people to use their vote. Years ago, before they had the vote, they had to obey laws. They had no voice in passing. They had to pay taxes. They had no voice in levying. They had to send their sons to war.
I'm sorry. Oh. I'm going to cut you right in the middle of that because I just got banged on the shoulder here that we have no time left.
Oh,
and
I'm
it's
sorry.
Break time.